A stranger with a gun came upon two teens taking pictures under a rising full moon. But violence is only the beginning of this story.
Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and I've spent my career talking about how lives are undone by violence. The Letter is a podcast about how lives are remade. Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, and welcome to Voices of Reason. I am Jason Lee, along with...
Hello, Amy Donaldson.
There you go.
Hello, alrighty. That's my name.
That's right. And I'm going to make sure our levels are good here, because I always feel like these new microphones have been giving me a little hassle lately. And we are back together. Amy has been out of town visiting her native Alaska.
Yes,
home. I want to know, having been to Alaska only once... And so I only got the Inland Passage, right? I did like the cruise.
Yeah.
And so all I got was Juneau. But your folks live out kind of in the hinterlands, yeah?
Well, it's considered rural Alaska, Soldotna, which is on the Kenai River. It doesn't seem that rural to me. It's 3 hours from Anchorage. It's around Cook Inlet. So if you know where Anchorage is, there's the inlet where Captain Cook docked and quote unquote discovered Anchorage. If you drive around,
I'm
you know
sure
where Alieska is,
people are thinking you discovered me.
Yeah, yeah. So exactly, yeah. Herbie hit. When he discovered it for white people,
yes.
Or Europe. So anyway, So they live around that inlet, and sort of like I would say about 10 minutes from the Kenai River, which is where if you've seen. It's either the Russian or the Kenai River that you will see in photos of people fishing in Alaska.
Okay.
Those are the most popular and most famous places to fish. And it's an amazing place. It's really, really beautiful. And I got to hang out. Actually, we stayed in Anchorage, though, because my dad was in the hospital. And then we ended up going to Soldotna for a few days.
Anchorage, do you drive or do you
just fly in?
You got to fly in. See, that is
you can get there by boat. You can get there by boat. Well, yeah, but it's not like Juneau. So the capital, I've never actually been to the capital.
I've been to Juneau.
Because it is an island. So
Right.
Yeah.
But
and the cruise is a bunch, it's other islands, in like Sitka and Ketchikan.
Ketchikan, yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
So those are places that, you have to fly to. And yeah, I mean, I've flown to, like when I was in high school, we would fly to like Kodiak or to play basketball. I mean, yeah.
Did you really?
Yeah. So, I mean, my dad once flew me to a game in Palmer.
So your dad has a plane?
Well, he did. He crashed twice. And my mom said, no more flying for you.
Twice.
You know what? Flying in the bush is hard. And my dad's not the kind of guy that, this has been the hard thing about him having heart issues. He's not the kind of guy to take it easy and be cautious.
Yeah.
So he flew in a whiteout and got lost.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Okay,
so, well. Yeah. Well, to hear his story of that, it's pretty terrifying. So
It sounds terrifying.
He's had more than one to walk away. Is pretty phenomenal.
He's a tough old dude. I'll give him that. And
we want him to get older and tougher, but
he's
really having trouble with the take it easy, dad.
it's built into his DNA. He doesn't even know how to do it.
I did not get that gene, by the way.
I can take it easy, right?
I have no problem taking it easy.
Yet you can run 100 miles for reasons that still blow my mind, because I'm training for this 1.5 mile run, which I know people are hearing this and laughing.
I love that you're training.
And it's all I can do to do this, just so you know. I used to think that...
He's been complaining about how much it hurts.
I could bike 100 miles, but running a mile is just...
Miserable.
It is just killing my soul, man. I'm telling you. And to do the training, you have to do what amounts to be almost 5 miles of walking and running in a day. And like I say, when I get... That night when I sleep like a rock. I mean, I'm almost dead by then. So today we have a bunch to talk about, and we're going to start out with something that now we only have 4 minutes or 3 minutes to talk about, but we're going to have to kind of keep it moving.
Do you want to start with the Democratic debate? If we only
have
4 minutes,
let's do that. That's right.
Let's swap it up.
Okay.
So we both watched bits. I watched bits and pieces of Democratic debate.
I watched the majority of the second one, and I think I did all of the second one. But the first one, I only got probably the last hour.
Okay.
And what I was...
Which is probably more than most people.
Well, the truth is, it's too many people. And Tim Delaney and... no, it's Jim Delaney and Tim Ryan and John Hickenlooper, I think is his name.
Yeah.
They got to be gone. Marianne Williamson probably should be gone, though she has enough money and support thus far to continue. But her last soundbite at the end about, you know, doing love, and I'm like, okay, you know, I don't need a hippie as my
I would love a hippie, but I don't think it's practical.
At all.
Yeah.
At all.
I would just love them to be like the, is there such thing as a, could you have a cabinet position that's the meditation, yoga, spiritual?
She could be the ambassador to something.
To your soul.
That's right. There you go. Love,
she said
to love land.
Yeah. Yes.
And then, so anybody stand out to you?
Kamala Harris.
Yeah.
I mean, I became a huge fan.
Well, so let's talk about that a little bit. So she kind of calls Joe Biden, who I'm not a huge fan of, by the way, and mostly because
I have been a Joe Biden fan. I know he's flawed, but all of them are. There's not a politician that I like.
I don't disagree with you.
You know how much I love John McCain, and he had
some great flaws.
But I'm okay with that. I don't expect perfection. I expect you to be like, to look at an issue and analyze it and make a decision and sort of have some principle that guides you through your life, right? That's what I look for. And can you work with people and figure things out and make amends and own mistakes? Like, I loved the moment where Mayor Pete said,
with a shooting in his town.
Yeah, I didn't do what I needed to do. He owned it. It was his problem.
To me, that's the Joe Biden thing that he doesn't do. I don't feel like he
has been an issue. Yeah.
And so she calls him on the fact that he supported busing.
Actually, he did not support federal mandated busing.
Right, no, but he
just so we're clear on this. I want everyone to be clear on this. There was segregation 20 years after Brown versus Board of Education. They were still discussing whether or not the federal government should mandate integration through busing. So taking kids from their neighborhood and making them go to a different school so that all schools would have multicultural student bodies. And there were people who were opposed to it. And Joe's defense of that was that he thought local government should make the decision. And Kamala Harris's point was, I lived in California. I was on the second group of students who had to do busing, and they would never have integrated. If the federal government had not mandated it, let's be clear, there are communities that would still be completely segregated.
And there are a bunch of them as it is, effectively.
And some of
them
have reverted back to since busing has ended.
And so, to me, but to his defense, because at the time, I mean, she got him pretty good because he didn't really have much to say. He later on supports, you know, what she was saying. You know, he is slowly but surely turning his ship around where he's trying to own some part of his mistakes, though he just does not come out right and say, I'm sorry, which is really how you should lead any discussion when you know you've done something that has been less than what you think that have been optimal in those situations. Mm-hmm. And so I give him some credit for that. I want to skip to the next day because I know we only got about a minute. And
So who impressed you? Who stood out to you?
Julian Castro.
Okay.
Impressed me. Harris was pretty good. I hate to say it because I don't. I'm an ageist a little bit. I love Elizabeth Warren.
Yeah.
She has a plan.
I know.
She has a plan.
I do love the plans, and I've been reading her plans.
Yeah.
And I do love the plans.
And they're thoughtful.
Yeah.
So
they are really well thought out. Very. I mean, like, it just makes you feel like she's a grown up.
Right. No, it's true.
Yeah.
And I feel like I'm falling off the Beto O'Rourke train. Mayor Pete.
I fell off and got run over. I actually never was on the Beto O'Rourke train. Let's just say that. I never saw the attraction. But I mean, compared to Ted Cruz, I can see the attraction.
Certainly.
But when you put him up, I thought it was extremely arrogant to say, I should now be the president.
Right.
Right? Go do
having
something.
Done nothing, right.
Go do something in public service and then come back and talk to me.
Also, again, I like Mayor Pete the more I listen to him.
I liked his answer about religion. As a spiritual person who is left of center, I found that to be it's the first time I felt acknowledged for my faith. I feel like it's a lot of discussion about, you know, other people's faith and how much more faithful they are because they adhere to a certain political framework, which I do not adhere to. I don't adhere to either side. So I don't really, you and I have discussed this, but I love that acknowledgement that, hey, faith is, it manifests itself in your life, in your principles.
That's right.
Right. Like one party doesn't own faith.
Right. And Tulsi Gabbard, I was unaware of her before. I don't know that she's going to be president, but I do like the idea that there is a Samoan Hindu in Congress.
What I actually, so I heard lots of bad things about her from Democrats. Right. They don't like her. The Russians are behind her, blah, blah, blah. I actually found her to be really smart, and yeah. I thought her answers were thoughtful for the most part. I mean, I'm saying every single one.
Certainly. Yeah.
And I don't agree with all her positions, but again, I don't agree with everybody's, all of everyone's positions.
So, and it's still early.
So it's still early, but I will say that Annie Leibovitz photo of the women who are running, the Democratic women,
yeah.
Please, please, can the president or vice president please be a woman? That's all I'm asking from either party. That means Trump's got to dump Mike Pence if he gets reelected. But somebody needs to give us a woman. I need a woman in leadership.
I concur 100%. You're listening to Voices of Reason. We're back with Voices of Reason, Jason Lee and Amy Donaldson. And we want to get to, this is kind of the big one for Amy today, is we want to get to race,
mm-hmm.
and I'm going to kind of let you explain kind of where you want to go with this.
I just, you know, Jason and I have had a few experiences in the last little bit, either together mm-hmm. or separately, and I just find that race is such a difficult thing for people to talk about. I have had my own faux pas, my own, Uncle Joe moments, where I've stepped in it, where I've said something that I can clearly see in hindsight was inappropriate or racist. And I think that what I want to re-encourage, because I have encouraged this in the past, is to not think of racism as like a disease that you have or don't have, right? It's not rabies. So it is... You know, if you're like me, you're a white person who's raised by white people in a mostly white culture, you're probably going to have racial biases. I don't have animosity towards people of color. I just don't know things.
And similarly, as a black person who didn't have a black friend till I was in college, I grew up with a lot of the same thing, just in the opposite. And I had to unlearn a lot of stuff, too.
Yeah. And so you get cooked in whatever stew you're raised
in. Absolutely.
And just understand that there's bias and that... having conversations about race is really important, even if you're really uncomfortable. And I would suggest if you're really, say you have no people of color, you have no friends of color, right? Nobody you work with is...
We're talking about people that you interact with, not just
casually.
I don't
mean the guy that you look at. I don't mean your coffee guy or you know what I mean?
Or
the security guard who checks you in, right? They have to be your friend. You have to be to their house. They have to come to your house. You have to do things together, share common interests. So say you play basketball with some people mm-hmm. who are of different ethnicities than you. Then I would say go to lunch, invite them to your house, go to their house, right? But I would also like to say specifically to white people, I would encourage you to do just a tiny bit of learning about race, because white is a race. White has a culture. And so you need to understand where you're coming from. And it's not just that. And why there's this sort of default whiteness everywhere. Right?
And that's not good or bad, by the way. That's
just
what it is.
Yeah, it just is. And it's not your fault. You shouldn't feel guilty about it or any of that stuff. I'm not saying any of that. I'm just saying be aware of it because it makes other people uncomfortable at times. And you don't want to do that. You want to be friends with people. You want to learn from them. I mean, I love learning from other people. And frankly, I think if it wasn't for entertainment and food, America would not be the multicultural superstar that it is, because I think politically and in our lives, we really struggle with multiculturalism. Mm-hmm. But, I think it's just super important to keep doing it. I would recommend, again, Waking Up White for anybody, not just white people. And then I would, because then you need to know, like you said, what are the things you were taught about race and ethnicity and culture. And then I just suggest any Toni Morrison book. but, any book I suggested somebody read, Native Son the other day. I say, if you don't want to read, I think those...
And these are audiobooks too, by the way.
Yeah, White Fragility and Waking Up White are self-help books, right? So they require you to think and look at your own life and maybe do some little exercises at the end. I also think it really... I just had this epiphany I told you last week, right? I read a lot of nonfiction by black authors growing up, and I do think that made me aware of things that nobody taught me, right? The teaching came in learning those stories and understanding those experiences, reading Beloved, understanding why would a slave kill her own children rather than let that baby be taken back into slavery. So if you just said that to me before I read Beloved, I would think she just hates her children. She's just a horrible human being. She's not human. She's not a mom. After I read the book, I would kill my own child. Yeah. And so I understood it in a way that I didn't before. And I would just say that reading nonfiction or fiction, fiction sometimes is an easier entrance. And that's why I say Native Son, Invisible Man.
Ooh, man,
you know, a lot of these things that you probably know of that maybe you...
Anything by James Baldwin, too, by the way.
Oh, yeah. I mean, and, you know, I'd say read the play Fences or go see it or watch the movie,
loved it. Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So just and always, 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 I recommend to everyone Blindspotting.
Okay,
the single best movie about race.
I will say that because I've been trying to be an evangelist for this movie, and I still don't feel like it's getting... Because it went under the radar when it was at Sundance,
yeah,
to me.
Yeah.
And now having seen it, it is, and I promise folks, this is not hyperbole. It's one of the best movies I've ever seen, and it's certainly the best movie I've seen in 20 years. And I'm trying to think, you know, what was
for
any...
me, it's the best movie I've seen on race. Someone like
this
me,
one of the best movies, period.
But yeah, but for someone like me to understand what it's like to be a black man in America right now, right? That it was. I mean, how hard is that, right? I'm a woman. I'm white. I live a totally different life. I am afraid of the dark. I'm not out in the city, you know. So I have a total – and I love the woods. It's funny because I really have one black friend who will hike with me. The rest of them are like, I don't like the woods, right? So
I don't mind the woods. I'm too lazy.
Yeah, but not anymore.
Right.
But I just think that for me to be able to understand that, to feel that anxiety, to feel that fear, to feel that anger, right? And that hurt, that heartbreak about this situation and loving a country that doesn't love you back,
sure,
right? It was, I told you when I saw it, it's 2-hour anxiety attack. And at the end of it, I felt like I had run 50 miles. It was exhausting and life-changing.
And enlightening. That's
yes,
right. And life-enriching, too. So those kinds of things. Again, these are you have to look inside yourself and want to have this education and be ready to deal with some uncomfortable parts about yourself. But again, this is trying to learn more about self-actualization is what I kind of...
Yeah.
We're all looking to find all we know about ourselves so that we can shape ourselves in the best way we know how. So you have to be willing to be afraid and find out some things about yourself that you may not like necessarily. We've all done it. But in order to improve those things, in order to overcome them, you have to be aware of them, kind of recognize where they come from, and then be able to move past them. And these are the kinds of things we feel like would be helpful. You know, so to me, race is part of my life every day. And I can't get away from that. I've had people on Facebook try to say to me, you know, why do I have to always think of things, you know, in this negative light? I'm like, well, I don't always think of it in a negative light, but this is my reality.
But I do think that's an important difference. I don't have to live and talk right about race because my race is the default culture.
Exactly.
So so I can avoid it. I can be done with it. I can be tired of it. When you are a person of color, my sister, my brother-in-law, my nieces and nephews, they don't get to take a break from it.
Ever.
Ever, ever, ever. So that's why I think it's important to keep at this. And the other thing is, my life is exponentially better because I do keep having these conversations and I do keep learning things about myself. I don't want to keep saying things that hurt someone's feelings. So somebody that loves me needs
to say... On purpose or inadvertently.
And almost always inadvertently.
That's right.
I don't actually try to hurt people, but like I said, I don't have animosity behind my racism.
Mm-hmm.
But I say... I want them to say to me, Amy, that's kind of racist, and here's why, right?
Yeah.
And or why would you say something like that? That mean that's the assumption that is behind it. And I think, gosh, I never even thought about that, right? I thought I was paying you a compliment. And they're like,
well, like,
by paying me a compliment, you're saying that I am this stereotype and I'm not, right?
I've learned these kind of epiphanies you've given me about being a woman, you know? Like, look, when you walk in your own shoes, it's hard sometimes to see outside of them.
Oh.
But if you ask yourself, like, what would it be like to do this, you know, if I were someone else?
Mm-hmm.
And not just for a minute, right? And that's part of the thing, too. You always feel like, well, that one little incident doesn't seem so bad. It's sort of like the lady walking around New York and all these people are saying stuff to her. Well, to me, that will never happen to me.
Mm-hmm.
There is no circumstance under which that's going to happen. But that happens to women all the
time.
That's
our lives. And that's our lives online. That's our
that's
lives
right
in real life. And, you know, at some point you just start feeling hunted, right?
And so we have to, as I mean, when she means, mentions race, we all have to recognize that other people
have a different experience,
have different experiences,
yeah.
And be willing to embrace that thought and then try to learn from that,
yeah.
And hopefully become more empathetic.
Yeah. And I think it also makes you, it enriches my life. Like I don't know why. I can't even remember who first introduced me to James Baldwin. I'm pretty sure he was the first black author I read. Mm-hmm. But I know who introduced me to Toni Morrison. And honestly, that might be one of the best gifts I ever got. For two reasons. She's an amazing writer and storyteller, right? But I understand something about my country's history that I don't think lots of people do, black or white, right?
And so you got to – these are the kinds of things that, again, the road to enlightenment is long and it is
And it's not always pleasant.
No, it's not. Yeah. It's not always pleasant, but it is almost always enriching. And to me, that makes it all worthwhile. You're listening to Voices of Reason. Back to Voices of Reason, Jason Lee, along with Amy Donaldson, and we're jumping around subjects today. So started out with a little bit about the debates for the Democrats and politics. Just a little bit about race. Now we're going to talk something about, well, I guess it's sort of like race adjacent. So the Trump administration had been for a long time pushing having a citizenship question on the upcoming 2020 United States Census. They've actually pulled that back.
The court said they can't do it, right. And they could resubmit a different reason for wanting it.
And so, Amy wanted to talk a little bit about. Okay, so to me, this seemed to be kind of a blatant thing about race because they want to try to track who is particularly those people who are brown, and try to find out more about the makeup of the folks that they're kind of out to look for, and. You might think that that's, not true. I understand that. I mean, there's two sides to that. However, I'm kind of glad that the courts sided with, not having it on there because I think it should be voluntary. But, Amy, you think that there's an importance for what reason?
To ask the question?
Right.
Oh, no. I mean, I think it would be nice to know because I do think that immigration is such a political weapon right now. It would be nice to know. How many people are here legally? Why did they come? How many people are here illegally? What do they come for? How did they get here? Did they cross the border? They overstay their visas? We have some ideas. We have estimates. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like rape statistics. There's a lot of people who don't report or who don't want to participate in the information process. So our numbers are not super reliable. And that allows people to play politics with mm-hmm. it, I feel. So I would love like legitimate numbers. I also understand that census data was used to intern Japanese citizens, to find them, to identify them during World War II. So after Pearl Harbor. So I absolutely was okay with them not asking the citizenship question. What I would love to see is the groups that work with immigrants sort of try to come up with better numbers and collaborate and share those numbers with government agencies so that they could say, have some idea what we're dealing with. Just so you know, like people who are immigrants who are here, refugees who are resettled, mm-hmm. There are specific ways in which they access services. If you're here illegally, you can't, and you don't have documentation, you cannot access welfare.
Absolutely.
Or you can get on food stamps, or you have to have social security number. You have to have identification. Now, can you forge those and commit another crime to get
right.
those? Sure, you can. And that would be interesting to know, too. Like, is that happening and how is it happening? I can tell you I know a number of undocumented people, and they do not forge documents and do that because it draws attention to them.
Right.
So they're not accepting.
Because that's
not
a crime that they can actually put in jail
here,
for.
You don't. I mean, I don't know if any of you have ever been on welfare. Let me say, my sister was on WIC, it's a women, infant, and children program where they basically give you food staples. So milk, cheese, things that they were very poor. And they give you those
cheese,
if you have a child under two. And so she had to go in. He had to be weighed. They basically did a little pediatrician visit. she had answered a whole bunch of questions. I went with her. You get treated like, correct, you know, garbage. You're human garbage, right? I mean, we are talking about prejudice against poor people. And this is a family that's trying to get on their feet. My brother-in-law was leaving the military and transitioning to a new job. And so they were getting these services during that time.
The fact that a person who served the military should have to go on exactly any kind of assistance is an abomination,
and let me say,
beyond belief.
He went into work in law enforcement, and had he not been able to do moonlighting and work
still wouldn't have made
all these other jobs,
right,
I think they would have remained on women, infant, and children, right, until their kids were over the age of two. But they eventually got a job and got hired, and it got better. But I just think that we have to be aware. So for me, I want the information. I think the information is valuable to the government agencies who are trying to help, people who are, these are people on the margins of society. And I absolutely would love to be able to say definitively there are this many undocumented people. This is why they came. This is how they came. Here's how we fix that problem. Here's why we don't want that problem. Undocumented people in this country, an invisible population, is dangerous to the poorest and most marginalized in our society.
And some of the most vulnerable people in our society.
There's a lawsuit right now against a local hotel because they took advantage of minorities who wanted to come here, immigrants who wanted to come here and work and participate in an internship program. And they didn't dare say anything because they didn't want to lose their opportunity to be in America and learn English and get business experience. They didn't even want to stay here. They just wanted to have this American experience, right? And I think that's the value in the numbers and in having that accurate information. I think that the justification, the court saw it as racist. They saw it as, you only want this because you want to identify these people and kick them out.
And so in that way, I'm grateful that the system has kind of oversight to block what they believe is ill intent. And you may disagree with that. I mean, that's kind of what this is all about.
So the court didn't say the question was bad. They said the justification for the question was
bad, which is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
So they read behind it and said, it seems as though the reason you're trying to do this is not exactly,
it's not American.
It's right.
We don't like it. We don't want it.
Not, the transparency isn't quite there. So for that, I applaud them because I don't always agree with every decision, However, the checks and balances works for a reason. And, different administrations have their justifications for a variety of things they do. And the Trump administration has, given people a pretty good indication of why they feel like they want to do different things. And, everybody who listens to this show knows that I'm not a huge fan. However, they haven't done everything wrong, but I felt as though this was going down a bad road. So I'm grateful that it does not is not going to continue. And there's so many other things to worry about. This is one of those small little incidents that some people will think is a big deal. Others will say, well, it's not as big a deal. I guess it depends on if you were being affected by it the most.
I think it's important to note that one of the reasons that advocates, like Hispanic, Latino advocates, were nervous about it was because there's, legal immigrants here, people who've had a legal asylum who would not participate, and they need those counts because those people do collect services and they do need that information for local and state governments.
So at least one time, the courts, they saw it a little differently.
Think they get it right more often than not.
It's true. Yeah. When we come back, we're going to continue with our discussion about the administration, but in what I think is kind of a positive way. You're listening to Voices of Reason. Back with Voices of Reason, Jason Lee and Amy Donaldson, and we want to come back and talk about a very historic event that took place this week when President Donald Trump stepped over the line at the demilitarized zone and went to North Korea.
Which I've been to the DMZ.
Have you really?
Yeah. So during the Olympics,
they took us
up there, or they, well, let's just say you could sign up, and my grandfather is a veteran of the Korean War. And had talked to me about what it was like being there and what it was like leaving with sort of this weird nun. And, this, it, a truce, but I don't know that it's ever like finished. I mean, it was a weird negotiation. Mm-hmm. Like, here's this space of land. I mean, they just took these villages and separated them and
just
made this
put a line through
no man's land. Yeah. And it was really traumatic for the country.
I would imagine.
And so,
because there was a one time unified Korea.
Yeah. And so, and it's not technically even over for them. The conflict is not over.
No, certainly.
Because it's just been like, we're going to do this and then we'll figure it out later. And then it just never
got,
we could never figure it out because clearly there were issues. But so your desire to talk about this and your opinion on it made me think, like, is there anything, like, it's so difficult now to discuss anything Trump does without people having an emotional reaction, right? They, like, I hate what his policies at the border so much. Mm-hmm. That I really have to separate that out from.
Right, at the Mexican border, yeah.
And then you mentioned the allegations of sexual assault against him again, and we had a little debate about the presumption of innocence and why you can't hold that against him until somebody files a criminal charge.
That's right.
Or how you can hold it against him personally, but, like, people, the voters chose, they knew these things beforehand, and they chose to elect him. So, so you just have to separate, and I think we're all having a difficulty, well, maybe not all of us, the majority of people cannot separate their emotional reaction to Donald Trump from what he does as a leader. And so I thought it was interesting that you were giving him kudos for the, I saw the visit to North Korea completely different. I thought it was, I don't necessarily think it's a bad thing, but I thought it was interesting that people who were so against President Obama trying to negotiate peace with Iran would have this reaction. 'Cause I feel like there's definitely this double standard, but again, certainly, it's all about politics. The same thing on the border, people who are, you know, find what is happening there now appalling will not acknowledge that when unaccompanied minors came to this border in 2014, President Obama's administration put those people in cages. No, he didn't separate people. They came unaccompanied.
And he fed them.
Yeah, but and then maybe they had toothbrushes. I don't know.
Yeah.
But the ACLU sued and they won.
Absolutely.
And they sued and they won here.
Mr. Deporter in chief, by the way.
So if you want to if you want to find a hero in all this mess in the last 20 years, is the ACLU.
Right. Who have tried to fight
for
their rights.
Who have tried to at least fight for human rights at every turn under every administration.
But back to Korea.
Back to Korea. I saw it as premature. I thought, why are you rewarding this guy with a photo op? You make him look like a hero to his people. But you're not, there's nothing that, we didn't get anything for that. I feel like if you're going to get a photo op with our president and with, you know, be our ally, then you have to do something. He's admitting that he's never getting rid of nuclear weapons. He's done missile tests that he aimed at Japan. Japan is our ally. Japan has done something for us. Japan has made an effort to become in line with it. I feel like he didn't have to do anything for this. It's kind of like...
But he didn't have to do anything for it. We're not talking about him. We're talking about our president.
Our president wanted to go have this photo op and have everybody talking about this.
And he
and
did.
I feel like he did. What's important about it?
That it has not been done since that,
and why
that line was drawn.
Why hasn't it been done?
I don't know, but he did it, and it's and that's not unimportant.
It hasn't been done because no president would go there and give the North Koreans that moment without something in return.
But he'd already been doing that. He'd been leading up to that.
But what did we get?
I didn't say we'd get anything. I'm not disagreeing with you.
No,
right.
I'm just saying, I just thought going and having a photo op's not historic. Going and having a photo op when they've given you,
can do you both.
Something.
They're
no.
Not, sure.
No.
He stepped into North Korea. That's the first time an American president has done that.
But
so
why? But again,
that's
I don't.
History.
But just sort of like when the Russians came to the White House and they went in the Oval Office, right? That was historic.
It was.
It was, as me for me, horrifying.
I don't
the Russians in our
it
White
was,
House.
I
don't want.
I'm not making
our
a
president.
Judgment. I'm just saying it was historic. And so
well,
the fact that he did that
maybe.
Is historic.
I just find and so. It's hard for me because I have to separate. I did think I want to give President Trump a kudo. I thought the North Korean thing was not cool. But I thought the fact that he signed the executive order saying that hospitals and insurance companies have to tell us what things cost was in my – I know that it's not going to solve the problems. You don't have to send me emails about this. I know that there are bigger – there. This will cause other issues. But let me just say that this is a step in the right direction. It is a step in looking at what our healthcare costs. All we've been debating for the last 10 years is access to healthcare, access to insurance. We have not ever looked at the cost of it, and that is what is killing people. That is what is causing bankruptcy. That's why we have GoFundMes for, mm-hmm. imagine you had your heart attack with no insurance.
And we will talk about my heart attack on a later show.
Yes. And I'm excited about that.
Well, I am too, because I get to actually talk about it rather than being dead. That's a whole other thing. You know what? So we kind of went across a lot of things, and I don't want to kill all our, the people editing this. So next week, we are trying to do a couple of great things in the coming weeks. One about race that I think we can actually get lined up if mm-hmm. we can get the two people that we talked to yesterday to actually, mm-hmm. one of them yesterday, and then the other person would have to come in. And we're excited about it, so we don't want to get too far ahead. But part of our journey here is to impact our community and the community at large
in
a positive way.
Yeah.
And we believe having sometimes difficult discussions can lead us in that direction. And that's one of the things we're trying to set up. So,
we know it's never been harder, and we beg you and plead with you to just keep at it.
Keep at
just
it.
Just like Jason's right. keeping up his training.
I am.
It's painful. It's killing him.
And it's almost as bad as the heart attack I had, but that's another story.
But just keep at it.
Well, I'm going to keep trying to do that the best I can anyway. Hey, listen, thanks for joining us, and join us again for the next episode of the Loudmouth Project's Voices of Reason. If you have any comments about our show, please contact us via email at vormed@gmail.com or at vorjasonl@gmail.com. You can also find us on Twitter at @ADOnSports and at @JasonLee1. Our show's Twitter handle is @VORPodcast. Check out our Facebook page, and you can also find and subscribe to free episodes of our podcast on Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, or other places where you might find interesting content. Be sure to review our show as well. We love to get your feedback, and it helps us grow our audience. Until next time, I'm Jason Lee. When you engage in passionate debate, do your best to keep your dialogue civil. Try to be the voice of reason. Voices of Reason is a production of the Loudmouth Project.